like they used to be.
Scratched.
Yes, welcome to SVR. It's John Barrett here. The OMS Wolf Gill had the Marine on the seafront, now living just outside of Bridgewater for my sins. And because of modern technology, I can still do the show, so you lumber with me still. So today's show is a little bit different. Years ago, I used to do hospital radio at Weymouth. And one of the my bright idea, I said to the committee meeting we had there, we get loads of artists at the pavilion at Weymouth, so why don't we interview them? So everyone said, oh, yes, that's a good idea. So I got Lumbered doing it. But most of the time, I picked the people who would do it. But for the very first one, I had to do it, really, just to make sure it all went okay. So that's what we got today. It's from my reel to reel, and it's not high-tech. It was done on a cassette recorder years ago, and I put it onto my reel-to-reel, and I thought that'd be something different to do today. So we've got a gentleman called Frank Allen. Now, anyone who knows their pop history will know Frank Allen was in the Searchers. So I'm not going to really tell you too much more than that. I'm just going to press this button, and we shall play it and see what you think of it all. It's interesting, if nothing else, and it's the first time I ever did a recording. So let's hope it's all okay still now.
Before you were actually in the Searchers, in fact, you were
Cliff Revel and the Bennett Rousers.
That's it. Yes. Bennett Rousers,
Cliff,
yeah, that's it.
Cliff Bennett and the Rebel Rousers.
And that was right from the very beginning. That was your first group you were in, wasn't it?
Yeah, when I was 17. That was between 60 and 64.
Yeah, and did you actually do any recordings with them?
Yeah, virtually all of the recording life up to One Way Love. Started off at Joe Meek Studios in the Holloway Road there. Yep. Made all of the early records there. I can't remember, I think the last one for Joe was Poor Joe, or Got My Mojo Working. No, Poor Joe, I think. And then we changed from Joe Meek Studios and signed direct to EMI and recorded at Abbey Road from then on. But with Meek, it was, you know, the little everything recorded in the one room.
And it really was as small as Legend has.
It was minute, yeah. Yes, absolutely minute. There were two rooms, really. One room with all of the instruments in, where you actually, I don't know how they did it really, because it was a tiny room and you played drums, guitars, voices, everything was done all at the same time. So how he ever cut out the overspill, I think that's partly why Meek's records had a distinctive sound, because they had noise gates and everything so that you didn't get overspill onto other mics. And so therefore you got a very staccato kind of echo on it. You know, if you hear drums, it's as soon as you play a note, it cuts off immediately again, and it does give it a very distinctive sound. Noticeable most on things like the Honeycomb.
Yes, that's true. And there's always a hum at the beginning before any record starts.
Yeah, it was all sound on sound. Yeah, very, very primitive equipment. Mm.
But in its own way, quite well ahead of its time, I suppose.
Yeah.
So that's when you actually went on tour with obviously Cliff Bennett. You went around Hamburg way. Did you all the
Yeah,
and that's basically where you met the original Searchers.
That's right. Yeah. We went there in 62 was the first time in Hamburg. I think that's when it opened. We went there about a couple of months after it opened.
Yeah, because he was really one of the bright lights, Cliff Bennett, for the sound, wasn't it?
It was great. It was a very unshowbusy band, very very much a musicians band.
Yes.
Kind of thing. You know, all the other groups used to come and watch us. We got really big crowds, very localised, of course, mainly in London. We did go around the country, but basically our work was all around the London area, and used to get huge crowds, particularly in our home base of Uxbridge and Hayes, and really people queuing down the street. Week after week.
I see. And then Tony Jackson obviously sort of left and did the Searchers.
I was hanging around with the Searchers in Hamburg. This was when they weren't a recording band. They'd actually just turned professional, and like all the other Liverpool bands, they went out to play at the Star Club. And they were my kind of people, because they weren't real sort of ravers or anything like that, except for Tony, strange enough. I mean, he was the one who liked all the drinking and debauchery and that kind of thing. And the others were very, very quiet. Really didn't drink. I didn't drink at all. Not a spoonful of alcohol in those days, no. So I was very quiet, and we used to hang around together. And later, of course, in the wake of the Beatles, they started recording. I was still in touch in London, and when they knew that Tony was going after the, after the first few records, they asked me if I wanted to step in, which I did.
And what actually was your first recording with the Searchers?
When You Walk in the Room.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, I think, the one that stands up more than anything. It's not because I was on it or anything. I just think it's the song that is still as strong today as
it
was
Jackie
then.
DeShannon, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Needles and Pins is, without doubt, the biggest hit, the most successful record, but it's not as forceful a song to play on the stage. It's very much a laid-back kind of thing where When You Walk In The Room is attacking
you,
and
you
strong.
Get straight into
and there have been more versions of When You Walk In The Room done as well. Cover versions since.
So after that, you took over, and I suppose the next person to leave was Chris Curtis, was it?
Yeah. We'd done a tour. This was in early 66. We'd stopped being really successful with records. We'd had a couple of, like, modest hits. Take Me For What I'm Worth, I think we just had, which was in the...
That was an excellent...
Yeah, it was in the charts, but it was obviously not as high. You know, it looked as though we were going completely the wrong way with the recordings. We'd had He's Got No Love, When I Get Home, and Take Me For What I'm Worth, all of which... Well, He's Got No Love did quite well, but only on the strength of Goodbye My Love before.
Yes.
And, you know, any other time it wouldn't have got anywhere. But we were doing sort of fairly badly record-wise. I think Chris didn't really like the demotion sort of position.
No.
So he was, you know, feeling a bit insecure at that time, wanted to go into other things, was mixing around with a very kind of show-busy crowd in London and was thinking of getting into record production. And also it was very strange. I mean, he was like, you know, going very, very peculiar at that time. Was also taking some pills and things, which we discovered in Sydney and flushed down the loo one night, much to his disgust. He was going through a strange period.
Because that was the time when it was all happening, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, except for us, because we didn't do anything. You know, I mean, this was really kind of weird for us. But by the time we were on our way home, he decided that that was it, and he was going to leave. And he never actually played again with us. We had a meeting when we got back to London to see if we could persuade him to stay.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't. And we went through one of those, you know, momentary things where we thought, well, you know, should we try and carry on or shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Silly now, because we've since discovered that you should always carry on because it's much, much better. And we had a temporary drummer then called John Blunt, who was with us. It lasted more temporary than we thought. It was only going to be a few weeks till we found another drummer. He, in fact, stayed 3 years.
I see.
Teddy became too erratic. Nice guy, very nice guy. We've always managed to sort of pick nice people, but he was just a bit... just completely erratic.
And that's when Billy Adams and John...
Yeah, that was in 69. Yeah, we just couldn't rely on John Blunt anymore, and we felt he had to go. So it was a road manager that we had at the time that said he knew of this drummer that had been working in the bands that he'd road managed for, and he wasn't working at the time, and we decided to audition him.
Oh, and by then, you had left Pye, I presume, by 69, had you?
I suppose we had, Yes, I think we had.
Did Tony Hatch produce all your records with Pye, or did
you? Well, we were still on Pye when we had Second Hand Dealer, I think, which we virtually produced ourselves. Yeah. Another tragic mistake of ours. We were very bad at picking records at that time. We, in fact, wrote that one as well.
Yeah.
We weren't very good at writing songs at that time. Yes, he did. There was a really strange thing at that time, because we'd stopped having big successes, and we'd had a row with Tony and left him. I decided he was it was all over John Blunt. He didn't want John Blunt to play on any more records.
I see. Had enough.
And we didn't think that he should actually control what we did. Mm. And then Tony McCauley was just becoming very, very big.
Yes.
And it was all on for him to record us. And I went out and had a meeting with him and John McLeod, and they'd sorted out what songs were likely to be suitable for us, and that was all going to go ahead. And then suddenly it was all off. We were taken away from Pye. And Tito Burns, our manager, had said that it was because they wanted us to drop our royalty if we were going to be recorded by Tony McCauley. But since then, I have doubts whether that was the truth. I have no way of knowing if it's the truth.
Internal politics, possibly.
Yes, I very much doubt whether that was the case. I'd actually like to try and find out one day. But anyway, we were pulled off Pye and did a bit of independent recording, very unsuccessfully. Well, no, we've taken off Pye. We're put with Liberty Records, that's right.
Liberty, that's it, before RCA, was it? Because I remember we had a pub at one time. We had one of your 8-track cartridges, which you never get these days.
No.
It was an RCA one, you know. I think it was called Needles and Pins, probably the second one.
Dreadful, It was the re-recordings of the old hits.
Right.
I mean, another tragic mistake. Well, we only did that to keep RCA happy, because they wanted the hits in the catalogue. They wanted them re-recorded. Probably the worst thing we've ever done.
It wasn't very good, I would admit.
I think you flatter it. Well, we did that so that we could have more or less have our way over singles, because we did a couple of singles that were quite good.
That's right, yes.
Vahiva La, things like that.
So during the 70s, before you basically just toured, you didn't do a lot of recording then, or was it basically independent?
We recorded when we were with labels. There were gaps between labels, where there was a gap, quite a long gap between Liberty and RCA.
Yes.
And then there was a gap between RCA and the Sire period, which was in the beginning of the 80s.
I mean, those two LPs are excellent, aren't they?
Yeah, they were really, really, really good.
No, I think I've got one here, but I've got the other one at home, you know. I mean, they really are sort of...
Yeah, they...
I wouldn't say a return to form necessarily, but I mean, the production, everything was...
Well, I think they were... Yes, I think if we'd have had those albums in the 60s, without doubt, we could have done like people do today, just carry on taking singles off the album, certainly. If we'd have done those two albums now, of course, we could have even improved on the production between then and now, because you could have got much force and punch on it. It was a little bit laid back, a little bit American country rock.
Yeah.
But we could have got some really powerful drum sounds on them.
Yeah, you picked some good songs on them, didn't you? You wrote some, obviously.
Yeah.
You took quite a bit of care picking them, I thought, anyway, you know. So.
Are you trying to do an interview?
Yes. We were causing havoc in the background.
We're discussing our future programme.
Right.
Going on then, sort of, to, and then, where are we? We're up to really when Mike Pender left, was it, after the Sire LPs?
I thought you were all big buddies.
That'll be the day, yes.
So we don't talk about that.
You can talk about it. It was extremely unpleasant. Yes, there's nothing that one shouldn't talk about. I mean, whatever is the truth and nothing more. It was an extremely unpleasant experience in our minds and leaves a very nasty taste.
Yeah. And that's when your latest member, Spencer James.
That's right, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, that was. He's been with us nearly 4 years now. Again, again, it was one of those periods where, you know, when you have a change like that, you take stock and think, this is a big move. You know, what should we do about it? Is this time to give up or not? And John and I talked about it, and we decided, there's a future there, and we're going to give the thing our hardest shot. And in fact, we did. We worked so hard, got it organized and tightened everything up so much that it's actually been our most successful period, work-wise, ever. It's just been phenomenal.
The whole time, you've basically been full-time musicians.
We never ever stopped. No, there was never any stop. I mean, when I say never stop, I mean, most groups sort of say that when it means they've carried on working, like, every year. We work every week. Yeah. I mean, we do, a three-week period is some, you know, free of work is something we've never had. I mean, 5 days is about the most we get. We've actually got our first holiday this year for nearly 4 years.
Really?
We've got 10 days. Mm. And that's absolutely true. I mean, when we say we work constantly, it is week in, week out.
Well, I wonder, because obviously at the end of the 60s, early 70s, you've the cabaret in the north, not down in the south here, but I mean, you had Batley and you had many...
That was an awful period.
Yes.
It was a terrible period. You didn't actually work any less. You worked harder for less money and less satisfaction.
Yeah.
It was... that was the one period I look back on with horror, because you were working weeks in places. And then from that week, you'd go into another week at another place. And that would go on for about 4, 5, 6 weeks. And you'd end up just never getting home and not getting much money for it, I might add. And a lot of the time, you're doubling for a whole week. You know, lumbering all your equipment across town and doing another show somewhere else. I can't believe that we did all this. It was good training in that when the cabaret period came out, you had to learn how to control an audience and how to plan a show. Up to then, we've only really just done a succession of songs.
Yes.
But you had to learn how to pace the whole thing and how to communicate with an audience. And in fact, in this last 3 years, we've tightened the whole thing up. We've made it more of a production. We've introduced effects and lights, and the show has become a lot slicker.
Yeah.
I mean, noticeably to anyone who's seen us over the last, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
I think I saw you, Chance, I'm sure, about 1964, when we had all these pop packages where you used to have about 4 or 5 groups. It used to be great. You never get anything like that.
No, it would be economically... not viable. We've done packages in the last 3 years, the Solid Silver 60 shows, which have been just a sheer joy. But they're, of course, like ourselves, Jerry and the Pacemakers, and Peter Sars did. And that's as much as you can get. And those shows you're talking about, you used to get about 6 acts.
That's
on,
right. 20 minutes
each.
Yeah.
It would be quite fun to try and do one of those again. I don't know. You'd have to get people doing it just for the laugh, I suppose, because economically it just wouldn't
be viable, worth it.
But it would be great. Go out on a tour bus and do the whole thing.
Yes, I bet. I'll just finish with a couple of things. What about modern music? What do you make of modern music?
It's like every period. I mean, the biggest period for most people, I mean, it varies depending on how involved you are in music, is when you're, say, between 14 and 19, I would think. And that's when you're totally involved and really obsessed by it, and you've got your favourites and you're really into it all the time. Yes, now, for me, it's a case of whatever singles are out at the time. You know, it's individual things. I'm not of a persuasion where I like an artist and buy albums, things like that, and listen to it.
I think you do as you get older, don't you?
Some people are different. John listens to an awful lot more music than I do, and you know, a lot of modern bands I wouldn't dream of putting on the record player. But as far as what I think about it goes, there's an awful, people play a lot better now. The technology is a lot better. Maybe there's not quite so much fun about it. They seem to be very, very serious.
Yeah, they've got the business out of it. It hasn't
got the business side sorted out incredibly. I mean, they really do know how to make money. They got all that sorted out. I mean, no one does anything without the banks of lawyers and things. We knew nothing, which is why we never made fortunes in the old days.
Yes.
We didn't take ourselves too seriously, which I suppose is a plus, but for every plus there's a minus and vice versa.
Yeah.
And if someone said to me today, well, would you swap your sense of fun for the business brain that they've got today and make all that money, I'd have to say yes, you know, because it's too tempting not to. But we did have things that they didn't, and they've got an awful lot that we don't. I love the technology. You can go out on a tour now and know, unless a machine goes wrong, that your show is going to sound incredible, because it's all... basically a sequence. You know, you have sequences on stage. It's almost like playing to a tape. You set off rhythms. You can't go out of time because you've got things keeping you in time.
It's locked in.
Yes, it's locked in.
Yeah.
Synth patterns are locked in, and you embellish over the top. It's like having a part of a backing track in a studio and singing along with half a voice track and things like that. And that's the way things are. I mean, years ago it might have been looked on as cheating, but now it's a fact of life. Everyone does that. We don't do it now, but I mean, that's only, I suppose, money and complications that stop us doing it. You're really into a whole new set of technology. You've got to employ people to do it, and it's I suppose we'll end up having to get into that some way.
Do you think so, though? Because I'm certain people go to see older people like ourselves. We go to see you because you do play the music still, and you tend to think he's there and the guitar is there.
Yes, except that I would think that if you're watching it, you probably wouldn't know that. I've watched big concert tours and watch them playing. Unless you actually understand the technology, you wouldn't know that someone is actually being kept in with a sequencer. It all looks like it's being played up there.
Yes, that's true.
And
yeah,
so much of it is, you couldn't tell. So I don't think our audience would know either.
No, you've probably got a point. Yeah.
There's a lot of the modern stuff that we've done on our latest album in Germany that we thought of using sequencers to play along with, but it's a matter of, you know, kids adapt so much easier these days. They're brought up with computers and things. They know what they're talking about. We actually don't know what we're talking about, so we have to rely on advice from people who are more knowledgeable.
Right,
yeah,
yes.
To point you in the direction of buying something that isn't going to be out of date next week.
Yeah.
I suppose once you make the step and you do it, and then it becomes easier, and then your whole show gets built around that, and then it becomes, I suppose, a perfect show. I don't know.
That almost brings me to the last question. What about future recordings? What's in the pipeline?
Well, we have just been out to Germany. Well, it was last year, and we've done a new album. Made it in a place called Hennef, which is near Cologne. And it's a company that have had a lot of success on the continent, particularly with a group called Bad Boys Blue Over. No one over here has heard of them, but they are at the moment number 14 in the album charts with the best of Bad Boys Blue. So it's one of those kind of situations. Small company, lots of enthusiasm, and we've made an album called Hungry Hearts, which is 12 tracks, 10 new ones, and two which are remakes of Needles and Pins and Sweets for My Sweet, in absolutely different arrangements. I mean, stunningly different, so they couldn't possibly be compared with the old ones.
Just playing the old.
We compare them favourably because we actually knocked out with them. We never saw ourselves ever, particularly after that RCA album, doing any of the old ones again. And we made conditions when we agreed to put these two tracks, which were in fact afterthoughts, to help sell the album. And they met the conditions, we did them, we were really, really proud of those two. I love doing the whole album. You know, I'm astonished that the two old ones came out sounding so good.
Still managed to sound fresh.
Totally fresh, because they're absolutely, it's like a new group to them. They don't sound anything like the old ones, but it's not that they're not culture shock either. They're just good contemporary versions, which I feel in fact would sell in today's market by a new band.
I think this is what's happened with a lot of the 60s group. The music they actually produced, they may not have the top production in those days, but the synthesis
certainly didn't
weren't there. But the actual songs they did, well, you know, they're certainly timeless, well, aren't they?
Yeah, because there was no great complication about most of the songs. They were standard formula. They were beginning, middle, and end, and very singable tunes. Yeah. And songs have advanced, if you can call it advancements, since then, and they've become a lot more complicated. A lot of things are just built around feel these days. Incredible feel, but you can't sing a feel in 20 years' time. I was listening to Spandau Ballet's stuff the other day. They played True and Gold.
Yeah.
And you listen, they're wonderful. I mean, they're great. What good songs they are. They're really great. Unfortunately, I don't think they're going to be sung in 20 years' time, because they're, in fact, a bit complicated.
Yes.
You can't... I think you'd have trouble remembering all them. But, I mean, I'd be proud of records like that. I think they're wonderful.
There's no particular hook on them, is there?
There are when you hear them, but they're not... It's not the kind of hook that... You can sing the tune without actually something reminding you of the whole thing. Once you hear the record, you realise how good it is, and you can sing along then. But if someone said, right, sing me a Spandau Ballet, well, maybe kids can. Maybe I'm of the
Perhaps, I'm of
the wrong generation, and maybe they could sing one of their songs straight through. I don't know. But they are great.
Yes, that's
terrific.
Right, yeah.
Love to have written songs like that.
Yes.
I think Aztec Camera are good as well. I think that guy, the guy who does that is great. You know, that, I shouldn't really do that, say that it's one guy doing the whole thing, because we've heard enough of all that.
That's right, yeah.
You know, the lead singer syndrome, I'm against all that. So, but I mean, he obviously, I suppose, he's the writer, that guy, so I suppose he has most to do with those songs, but it's very, very good style. An awful lot of good people around. They take their music very, very seriously. They bother to construct things properly and take their time, make sure they've got it all right. I mean, Eurythmics are wonderful, aren't they?
That's absolutely right.
Tremendous. Yeah. We could, loads of their stuff that we could...
Thorn in
my side was like a Searchers song.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
The Pretenders will always be good. It's just a unique sound. And that's lovely for us, the 12-string.
Yeah.
And Chrissy Hines' voice is great.
Well,
people like Don Henley I like.
Yeah.
There's an awful lot of good people around. I'm yuppie rock. I love Dire Straits.
Yeah.
I mean, I really, really do love it.
Yeah. I always think of Dire Straits, to be honest, though, as the Moody Blues of the 60s. It's just me, you know, everybody used to play Moody Blues, Elvis.
Yeah, I suppose so, except me. I wasn't fond of them. I mean, I like them as people. I mean, if they ever hear this interview, I'm saying, what do you mean I don't like the Moody Blues? But it was a bit too sort of ethereal for me.
I find that personally with Dire Straits, it's the same thing.
I like them much more. The difference for me is the way Knopfler's voice gets to grips with a song. There's actually intense emotion in the voice. And I always go for emotion in the voice rather than other things. Mm. And the Moody's are lovely people, really, really nice people. I couldn't get too involved in the music.
No, I know.
But I am with Dire Straits. I think.
Well,
I've listened to his Brothers in Arms album. I just love the. The emotion that's put into the whole thing, and the cleanliness of the whole sound.
The production and everything. It's CD age again, isn't it? You know, everything sort of produced like this.
It's great. I loved their concert that they did. They did the end spot on the Mandela concert.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And I've taped that and kept it at home. It's just thought it was so good.
Yeah, I didn't see that, I must admit.
Well, it was like the best of album, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And with Clapton coming on as well, and joining them, it was... Lovely concert for me. Very predictable.
Yes,
I'm like a Searchers audience. You know, you go to the show and you want to hear them do the hits.
That's right.
And I'm very much like that. Yes.
Do you actually, about tonight's show, apart from the hits, what else do you do now?
Some of our old album tracks.
Mm-hmm.
One brand new song from the new German album, which is probably the best song in the show.
Yeah.
And you'll spot that one immediately. It's a big dramatic ballad. A couple of other fun things by people that we've worked with over the years, like Del Shannon.
You probably toured with him in the 60s.
Oh, we certainly did,
I saw you on the tour.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
I don't know if we did one in England with him. We did Australia with him. We did a tour of Australia and New Zealand with Del in 1964.
Yeah.
Him and Eden Kane and Peter and Gordon.
Yeah. Of course, Eden Kane's Peter Sarstis' brother.
This is true, yes.
Not a lot of people know that sort of thing, no.
No.
And you often have Peter with you, do you, when you do the show?
Yeah. He's perfect. It really feels as though the show's finished off when Peter's on the show. We've done other packages, but he kind of gives it a bit of class, I think. It feels right. There are very few of those acts that can open a show and yet really feel as though they are an act in themselves and not just a filler. And I think Peter gives the show class. I always look forward to it when he's on the show. It makes it feel much more of a theatrical experience than just a couple of groups.
Just a couple of groups.
Yeah. That doesn't bode too well for me, just group after group.
No.
Peter's lovely. It's great.
Well, Frank, you've got to get ready, I presume, to go
on indeed, stage. Yes. Everyone else almost is. I've got to get changed.
So thank you very much for your
time.
It's
a pleasure.
And like I say, we'll be playing that. What I'll do with the Shaken Stop It suit, if you like, is I'll be playing records through with it. You know, I think that'd be the easiest way and sort of make an hour or so show of it.
Well, I did try to do that, but it's too hard. Anyway, I'm going to play some of the tracks from the LP that Frank was talking about.
Keep on trying.
Yes, I even got these signed by the band, so it's a proper collector's item. We're going to play a couple more tracks and then we're going to have another interview from Weymouth. How could it be? People in Sibbeth who actually really like the Searchers, because it's somebody's birthday and they played in Pines Bar, and I saw them again there, and this is, well, I'm playing a couple more tracks by them now anyway, and then we get on to the other person who we interviewed down in Weymouth. Cringe time for Philip and Philip, Kate and Glenn.
I love it.
I think we're going to have one more track by the Searchers, and then we'll go on to Postman Pat down in Weymouth. And this is the last track by the Searchers. I hope you enjoyed the Frank's interview. So that's the end of the Searchers, and now we're going to go on to Postman Pat, and this is quite different.
Now then, there we are now. That's much better, isn't it?
Now,
hey, Pat's much better now. I feel more like Postman Pat now, hey. There we are. Right, I'm ready.
Welcome to Weymouth Pavilion, Postman Pat.
Well, thanks very much indeed. Yeah, lovely, isn't it? Lovely weather.
It really is nice at the moment, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a bit about the show you're going to be doing for the next few days?
Oh, yes, of course, Postman Pat's Adventures, and they all come from the book. Have you read the books? You know what the books are like? Yeah, right, well, they're all in there, all the different characters. Mrs. Goggins has come with us, and Ted Glenn, and who else? Peter Fogg and his tractor. Yeah, and I brought my van with me. So it's going to be a right good time, I think, today, and for this week.
Are there any fun. New adventures as well?
Well, now let me see. No, I don't think so. I think we're all the usual ones. We've got the van getting stuck, and it's my birthday. My birthday, you know that, don't you? Yes,
surprise.
April the 5th. Oh, no, it's not April the 5th. That's my birthday. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing all my friends here in Weymouth.
Yes.
All coming to see me. Are you coming to see me? You going to come and see me? All right. Oh, when's Mum bringing you?
It's a big surprise.
All right, I see. We're not talking about that.
No, they're not coming to see you.
No, they're not coming to see me. Right, well, no, that's all right. No. Well, never mind then. Well, we've blown that one, haven't we?
Oh, indeed. And are you actually touring around England at the
moment? Oh, yeah, we were in, where were we last week? We were in Darlington, lovely place. Quite near me, actually, Darlington. Yeah. Not that far away. That was nice and sunny there. And lots and lots of my friends came to see me there. And before that, we've been to Wembley, and we've been to Wales, to Swansea. We're going up to Aberystwyth. That'll be fun. We've been down the south coast before. We've been to Southampton,
yes.
And Bognor. That was
so,
nice as well.
So
yeah.
You've been around then.
Oh, we have. Yeah, we've seen lots and lots of friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you want to ask some questions?
Right, far away.
Who's your best friend?
Oh well, my best friend's got to be my cat Jess, because he's a good friend of mine. Yeah, and he's everything for me. My Jess. I mean, you know, I'm married. I've got a wife, and I've got a son called Julian, but. But my favourite friend is Jess, and he goes everywhere with me, and he sits in the van, and he's got his own little basket in the van, and he gets all involved in all the adventures as well. He likes coming around with me. He likes to see Mrs. Goggins, because she likes to give him a bowl of milk now and then, and a nice bowl of really cold water when it's really hot like now. And she's got a little muffler that she puts on. You know what a muffler is?
No,
it's a scarf. Another word for a scarf. It's got a nice little red muffler, and he wears that when it's really cold. So that's nice. And Granny Dryden knitted that, knitted this muffler for him. And he comes everywhere with me, and he can't sing, but he meows along with it when I start singing, you see. And he tells me what to do. Yeah. Yeah, right, next question.
What do you do in your spare time?
What do I do in my spare time? Well, now, you won't believe this, but I do a lot of knitting. I do a lot of knitting because Granny Dryden gets the wool for me from Pencaster. We have it delivered. And I tell you, there's a chap, he's a very good designer of knitwear, he's called Cafe Facet. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but your mum might have heard of him, Cafe Facet. Now, he does a lot of designs, and Granny Dryden gets me all the knitting patterns, and I knit lots of jerseys, and I think the whole of Greendale and kitted out in Cafe Facet design at the moment, and... let's see. Oh yes, I think Mrs. Pottage is having another child, so I think I'll be knitting some booties for her. But I'm not sure yet. I've got to see what happens with that. Yeah, because the twins are a handful, you know that. Pottage twins are a bit of a handful, so I don't know how she's going to cope. But I think Mrs. Thompson might help there. Might do a bit of babysitting. Yeah. Right. Next question.
What's Jess's favourite food?
Jess's favourite food. Now let me see. He likes kippers. He loves kippers. He likes kippers with custard. I don't know about that. Would you like your kippers? Do you like kippers? Would you like fish?
Yeah, I like fish.
What sort of fish do you like?
Codfish.
Like cod fillets? Well, he likes cod fillets too, but he likes his cod fillets with jam. Would you like his kippers with custard? Yeah. Next question.
How far is Greendale?
Greendale? What, from here? Oh well, it's I should think it's about 300 miles away, 250 miles away from me. It's in a place. It's in the Lake District. You know where the Lake District is? That's in. Shall I tell you? That's in northwestern England, and it's a place called Cumbria. It used to be called Cumbria, and it's in right in the. It's a valley in the middle of all these nice hills and things. You see, Greendale. It's just outside Pencaster, but I don't think you'd find it on a map. But you might do, I suppose, if you looked hard. Yeah, but it is a long way away, so I feel a bit homesick sometimes. And I tell you what, I feel a bit homesick because my wife, Sarah, she cooks me very nice cakes, and I miss having a nice cake. So if you know of a nice cream cake going anywhere in Weymouth, Will you let me know? Will you? Good, because I won't feel so homesick then. And Jess can have a bit as well. Will that be all right? Right, okay then. Bye. Next question. Anybody more? Right. Can I ask you a question? Do you think the water at the seaside will be nice and cold, or will it be nice and warm if I fancy taking a little dip in the sea?
Well, a little bit cold, I think.
A little bit cold, do you think so? Do you think Jess might like it? Because Jess likes a quick dip in the sea. Now, you wouldn't think that, would you? Because most cats don't like water. But Jess is he likes a little bit of a wash occasionally in the seaside. See, because we don't go very often. We occasionally go to Morecambe Bay. And that's on the west side, you see. He likes a dip, a little toe in here and there, you see. Likes that. But I'll fancy a nice quick swim, you see. But if the water's going to be very cold, perhaps I'd better not. Because I won't be able to deliver the letters, will I? If they get very cold, I'll turn blue. I'll have it'll be a red van with a blue postman inside. Well, I'm a blue postman. I'm wearing my jacket, so I'll be blue, won't I? That way. But my face will match my jacket. Won't it? Is that my glasses? Is that those? I'm a bit short-sighted. Now, if I take these off, look. I can't see a thing. Especially, I've got a very big hat on. Now this is a special postman hat. It's a big hat. A bit big for me, really, because I go like that, and I can't see anything anyway. No way. But you can't see that on radio, so I'll have to see what happens. My hat falls over my eyes. But never mind, it's all right. Yes, next question. What about what would be that?
Who's delivering the letters now?
Now? Well, now, whenever I go around the country to see my friends, we have a special lady who comes in occasionally. Now, I don't know, she's been in the television, I think. But I don't know if she's been in the books. Now, she's a nice lady, she comes from India. And she's an Indian lady, and she's the postmistress when I'm not there, and Mrs. Goggins isn't there. She does all the posts for me. She's a very nice lady, and she helps out. And she's very, very good. She's very good. And now, it's nothing against Mrs. Goggins, but she's a very good lady, this one. And she does all the work for me. Yes. Next question. Any more? Any more for any more? No. Is that it? Well, can I say something to all my friends in hospital radio land? All right, then. Well, listen to all the boys and girls in all the wards, in all the in hospital radio hospital land. Now, I want you to get a lot better very quickly and come and see me and my friends in Greendale as soon as you possibly can. All right. And there's a big hug for Mrs. Goggins, and Ted Glenn says hello, and this is from Jess. Meow. All right. So you all get better very, very soon, and maybe I'll see you soon. All right. Take care. All right. Bye-bye from me, Postman Pat. All right.
Right, boys. I think you all better say thank you to Postman Pat now, don't you?
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you want to say goodbye, Kate?
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Kate. Bye-bye. That's it. Hey, hang on. I've just noticed something. I should have noticed that before. It's because I took my glasses off. I've got to tell you this, boys. Kate's got a lovely picture of the van and me and Jess. Who's looking a bit, he looks as if he's just had his kippers, doesn't he? Yeah. He looks a bit happy.
Yes,
he's licking his lips there, I think. Well, that's smashing. Thanks very much indeed. That was nice to see you as well. All right. That's grand.
Thanks very much.
Right.
And here is Postman Pat. Singing.
Postman Pat and his black and white hat. Early in the morning, just as day is dawning, he picks up all the post bags in his van. Postman Pat and his black and white cat. All the birds are singing and the day is just beginning. Pat feels he's a really happy man. Everybody knows his bright red van. All his friends will smile as he waves to greet them. Maybe you can never be sure there'll be not ring letters through your door. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat and his black and white cat. All the birds are singing and the day is just beginning. Pat feels he's a really happy man. Everybody
everybody knows his bright red van. All his friends will smile as he waves to greet them. Maybe you can never be sure there'll be not ring letters through your door. Letters through your door. Hey. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, and his black and white cat. Early in the morning, just as day is dawning, he picks up all the post bags in his van. Postman Pat, Postman Pat, Postman Pat, and his black and white cat.
I think we've got time for one more track by Postman Pat, and that'll be the end of the show. It's proper Sid Valley Radio, and though this is done down in Weymouth, it does still be the good kind of music. Anyway, let's get on with it, and so I want to thank you all for listening. It's John Bart saying thank you very much, and at the end of the next track there will be a little bit of information about Sid Valley Radio, because it's proper community radio. Anyway, I think this will go straight into the other one, and then it'll be the end of the show. So let's just, just to say goodbye. Thanks for listening. Hope you've enjoyed it. It's a little bit different today, isn't it? Yes. It will start any second again now. Yep, here it comes.
Here's the little story of a very special cat who's the friend and good companion of a certain Postman Pat. Traveling through the country with his good friend by his side, Pat knows his cat just likes to be, therefore he always likes to ride through the beautiful valley and its lovely countryside. As he sits up by the window and the views go gliding by, Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat, and it's always been like that, and it's always been like that, always been like that, always been like that, ever since that he was given as a tiny little kitten, ever since that he was given as a tiny little kitten. All the folks in Greendale like to wave or stop to chat, for they always like to see Pat as he goes by with his cat through the beautiful valley and its lovely countryside. As he sits up by the window and the views go gliding by, Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat, and it's always been like that, and it's always been like that, always been like that, always been like that, ever since that he was given as a tiny little kitten, ever since that he was given as a tiny little kitten. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat, and it's always been like that. Jess is the cat. Jess is the cat. Jess is the cat of our friendly Postman Pat. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat, and it's always been like that. Jess is the cat. Jess is the cat. Jess is the cat of our friendly Postman Pat. Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat.
Jess is his cat. Jess is his cat, and it's always been like that. Jess is the cat.
If you would like to contact Sid Valley Radio, we'd love to hear from you. You can message the studio from our webpage. Just go to sidvalleyradio.co.uk and follow the link on the contact page, or download our free iPhone or Android app, available from the App Store or Google Play. You can also text the studio on 07565 825 041. Or you can email the studio, studio@sidvalleyradio.co.uk. And don't forget, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Sid Valley Radio.